And Dan and I wrestled each other back in the 90s for NWA West Virginia when he was the NWA heavyweight champion of the world. I think it was a tag team match. I can't remember, Dan. Thanks for stopping by. And, you know, how we track people down, former wrestlers. How are you, Dan?
Well, I'm doing great. Literally, you tracked me down. I had to pull, you know, as we get to know each other a little bit more just off the air there. It's like, I'm driving down the road. I've headed for Crestview, Florida, and I had to simply take a veer off, find out what hotel was close by, ask the management, do you guys care if I use your Wi-Fi here real quick? And ta-da, here we are.
Go figure. See, that's where Dan is, and he keeps telling me all these different ideas. He's definitely a guy for sure that, and we'll have a great conversation. Go ahead, Greg, with you first.
Creative. Yeah. You gotta use totally. That mind. For creativity. I'm a very creative person.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, Dan, I got to ask you a real quick question. I see your flag comm going on there. Do you feel the country's under duress?
Yes. I actually had just educated Neil about that right there, because anyone that sees what has happened in these last 4 years.
Yeah.
Our country is so divided. Yes, it is. So I've had a lot of people ask me, I said, well, obviously you don't know your history if you don't understand why an upside down flag.
Yeah, that's right. Well, good for you. I appreciate you doing that. Dan, did you always want to be a wrestler?
No. I've done so many other things. I enjoyed athletics is what I did. I enjoyed athletics. I you know, my first love was actually football. I love football and through high school, stuff like that. And even upon graduation, I actually had a number of different college offers to go and play football, but I kind of got discouraged through high school because we had all the potential on paper to be a very good team, but you had to rely on everyone to do their job. You had to do their tackles, to do their blocks and things of that nature. And I mean, I was like a one-man wrecking machine. Anything that was anything close to me, oh, I'm going to plug that hole, or I'm going to tackle this guy, or I'm going to make that great block. But I chose the sport of wrestling because the definition of what wrestling is, it's a team sport based upon individual performances. The team can lose, and I can still go on. So I chose that, and that's the way I still do life today because – you know, a lot of people go, I'd like to go hang out with you. I go, you can't hang with me. I go, I said, don't let this gray hair fool you. Don't let that gray mustache fool you. You try to do what I do on a daily basis. You'll fold like a cheap deck of cards.
Yeah. Now you're talking about that following you with a camera. If you go into a bar when they know you are a UFC champion, you're a pro wrestler, how many people try to pick a fight with you at a bar?
But okay, first off, they would not see me in a bar.
Okay.
I mean, again, I have done different appearances at sports bars. So again, the combination of restaurant and a bar, stuff like that. And I even learned real quickly that do those earlier in the evening, not later in the evening, because if you do them later in the evening, some of the patrons have been there for a while now and partaking of one too many barley pops, and they start to get a little bit bolder with you. They start realizing because they'll see your signature, like, gee, you write like a girl. What? Because it's cursive and you actually and it's legible. Sometimes I have to watch out using big words, multi-syllable words when I'm at the sports bars, like legible and stuff like that. Like, did you say something derogatory? Yeah, it's. I just go to sports bars much earlier, and I, those are fewer further in between. I have so many other things that I do that I enjoy what I do, and I could cherry pick now.
That's great. You know, football, that's cool. Sports, I love that. Oh, but football. How did you get involved in MMA?
Football is action packed, bash bang boom. You know, yeah. I mean, every 30 seconds up to something's happened. Yes.
So how did you get involved in the MMA?
MMA, that all came about just due to a bad situation. Again, I have a degree from Arizona State University in the industrial arts. I was basically almost competed with a master's program before I left there and took a job at Michigan State. I was coaching at Arizona State as assistant coach alongside Bobby Douglas. Bobby Douglas was actually the very first black head coach of any sport. So I want to back up here because we have a divided country now. I want people to understand right now that like Dan Severn was the first assistant wrestling coach to the very first black head wrestling coach of any sport. You know, because I've put some posts out there at different sites that people are like going, "Oh, dude, you're racist." Really? Am I? I go, I went to college, and I go, the Bobby Douglas is still alive. And he kind of refers to me as his adopted son. So, you know, and I'm actually the first white guy to be inducted into an all-black fraternity. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because I always tell people, I don't hate based upon color, religion, or not. I go, I hate based upon stupidity. Yeah. Guilty all day long. Stupidity, yes. I don't like it.
So we'll talk about the MMA, like how did I get more? Because you told me that.
I saw a flyer. A flyer went to, came across, was brought to my attention. It was a Tough Man contest. Tough Man, I used to be big. It was a production that Art Door used to run, where basically it was three 1-minute rounds with big, probably barroom brawlers, but there were actually some other guys that might have done a little stint with some boxing stuff like that. So it was just 3 1-minute rounds, and it was just Haymaker City, probably one of the best known people from that industry would be Butterbean. He came out of that to where he became in boxing one of the premier 4-rounders, knocking out quite a few different people. I actually met Butterbean at that event there as well. So I jumped into this Tough Man contest. It's a 2-day event. It's a Friday night. It's a Saturday night. Friday night, you just do one fight, and they have, there's only 2 weight classes, 190 and under, and then anything over. Well, I was in that anything over category. And so, you know, some guys actually had boxing trunks and stuff like this. I show up wearing a pair of amateur wrestling shoes, which kind of look like boxing shoes.
Yeah.
And an amateur wrestling singlet. And I realized my hair is jet black. Back then, black mustache, and I mean, I look like probably John L. Sullivan out there. I didn't know how to hold my hands. I had never had a pair of boxing gloves on before. And this big guy, as soon as the referee starts that first match, he's throwing these haymakers at me. I'm like, I just hit him with both gloves. The only part I need to back up on is I watched him setting up the ring, and I realized they're setting up a professional wrestling ring. I had already started training with Al Snow, the professional wrestler. Oh, really? Al Snow with Head. I'd been going over to Lima, Ohio, been training with him, and I already knew the dynamics of a professional wrestling ring. So the Tough Man contest was in this professional ring. I hit with both gloves, and we're going for dead center of the ring ropes, and I know what's about to happen. The rubber band effect is going to take place. I shoot him on in as we hit the ropes. I hear the wah. I'm thinking, and as I start to come right back in, I wrap my arms around his body and I threw him in a belly to belly, launching him. And he hits that canvas, tears off about half of his face. The crowd erupts because they had never seen something like this. They're going absolutely apeshit in the process. Mm. And I think I'm about to be disqualified because I didn't do nothing that even resembled boxing. And I looked and Art Dorr jumps on up. I mean, he looks like Wolfman Jack. He's got all the silver hair back. He's got the silver beard. And he's got the suit on and stuff like this. He hears the roar of the crowd. He looks up at me. I look down at him. He's like, well, throw him again. I can do this, you know.
Oh, wow. And that led to MMA.
Yeah. Again, I went through that. And then it came to my attention. Someone sent me an old VHS tape. Again, it was new then, but they sent me a VHS tape about this thing called the Ultimate Fighting Championship. The first three things had already taken place. People, because I got to educate people. The Wi-Fi, the internet was not all that great. When you look at back around that 1992, 1993 time period, the UFC basically started December 1993. I didn't really know about it until sometime in 1994. I was trying to get into UFC number 3. They had already had their quota filled. So UFC number 4, you gotta realize we're up to UFC number 300. They just had their biggest event, big 300. And I found out about it, and I was able to get into UFC number 4. And wow. Again, and when I tell people, by the time they told me that I was in, I basically only had like 2 weeks to train. But I drove over to Lima, Ohio, basically each day for just a couple hours. So for 2 weeks, a couple hours a day, I'm over there with Al Snow and a couple other professional wrestler trainees. And they had like one old pair of boxing gloves that they would put on. I didn't have a pair of gloves. And they're like, well, you can't punch these guys. I go, I'm never going to punch you. I'm a parry. And I'm going to go for clinches, takedowns, and I'm going to slap on amateur wrestling moves, make them, turn them illegal. And that's my submission hold. So they would be screaming and squawking. And literally, I would go like the entire time. I would grab a sip of water every now and then. And then they were actually throwing the gloves at each other because they didn't want to go out there anymore with him because they're like going, he's not being nice to us. Again, I never punched him, never hit him once. I just throw him down, throw on a chicken wing and turn it illegal, throw on a cross face, turn it illegal. And it just, I did legitimate amateur wrestling moves, now knowing that amateur wrestling moves, you're forcing your will upon it, on an individual, but they're forms of leverage. Another word for leverage means it hurts. That's what I mean. No one's going to roll over on their back and be pinned. Again, because some people might be thinking, is he talking about professional scene? I'm actually talking about both industries. In professional scene, the match ends by a pinfall. In amateur wrestling, you can win by points, but then you can also win by pinfall.
Gotcha. Which I don't know a lot about the amateur wrestling, but I had to learn how to do some amateur wrestling, especially when people would stretch me. Damn, when I first started out and I would get, 6'10", big guy, they get me down the mat. The Headbangers did that to me, the Spiders. And a couple, when they worked as the Spiders, and we worked out at Burt Prentice's, and before they were the Headbangers, and then they stretched the heck out of me.
Neil, that's why you should actually come to my training facility, because I would actually teach you, because all of my wrestlers, I have a ring and then I have all these mats. They actually have to graduate to the ring. In order to graduate to the ring, they start off on the mats. And they actually get homework from me as well. Because if they come in there and they're just a turd, I go, well, you need to lose some of that turditis right now. Because that means you better start doing some jogging, because you need cardiovascular in a professional ring, because cardiovascular is huge. Otherwise, you're going to get blown up. I give them like a little list. I don't even make the list anymore. I go, get yourself a piece of paper and a pen, and I'm start telling you what you need to do. Otherwise, you're wasting my time and you're wasting your time. Go get a job at a gas station somewhere where you're sitting behind there, because your activity level is about that. Okay.
Oh, man.
Again, I'm brutally blunt and honest. I discourage a lot of people. Was I not discouraging you even before we got on the air?
Yes.
Okay. Again, because but if you have, I always tell people, if you have a legitimate job and you're doing this on the side, okay. But I always tell people that you don't ever invest all your heart and soul into professional wrestling, because there is no retirement plan with professional wrestling. Are you going to be smart enough and savvy enough to salt some money away for that rainy day? Because that rainy day is going to happen, or that day, or and there are no health benefits in professional wrestling. Are there? No. do you know why, Neil?
Why is it?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Don't. I mean, Greg, do you know why either?
No.
Okay. Because several of these professional wrestlers faked injuries, all my back, all my neck. They wrote out the insurance claims for a couple years while they're off fishing, hunting, whatever. And then at the end of the 2 years, it's like, Lord have mercy, I'm cured. Yeah, right. I'm trying to think, what's the one of the biggest insurance company? Give me a name.
Right, Blue now. Cross.
I'm talking about the high. There are some insurance companies that will underwrite a tanker full of oil going through enemy territory. They will underwrite that ship and the contents before they will ever underwrite a professional wrestler. That's what I'm saying. That's because they have better chances of getting that through than, you know, the claims that come up.
Wow. And at least that's not answer. That's not answering a question on a life insurance policy. If you're involved in pro wrestling. No, they don't have that. No, go ahead.
Yeah, what are your favorite memories in the WWE?
Well, I mean, I'm not certain what to say about that. It's kind of like because you asked me to sit there to pause and think back. I'm still adding so many different layers to my life. I'm not on the sidelines yet, watching the game. I haven't retired from, in other words, I have not retired from professional wrestling yet. I have retired from MMA. And what you gotta realize there, Greg, is I'm a 65-year-old man. I'm not your average 65-year-old man. And what I was telling Neil before we got on air is I'm also lifetime chemical free. You find someone in professional wrestling that can make that claim. You find someone in the MMA world that can make that claim. Because even in their off seasons, a lot of these guys tend to dabble just a wee bit.
That you're definitely different in those ways. When you talked about WWE, how did they approach you in pro wrestling? Because again, you got trained by Al Snow. Didn't know that. When you were getting trained by Al, I was getting trained by Charlie Fulton. I think almost the same time. I don't know. What year were you getting trained by Al?
Well, again, this all came around in by 1992, because that's when my life got turned upside down. And I had to go after things. So I aggressively went after professionalism. I only trained for just a few weeks with Al, and I realized I'm not getting enough training. I need to get matches and stuff like that real quickly. I went down probably after my second or third week of just doing some training with Al, because it's only getting trained a couple of days a week. I went down with my tape measure and my clipboard. I took tape measure, stuff like that, and I built my own ring.
Oh my! So you're almost like a semi, kind of a backyarder in a way. By building.
Well, no, yeah, but again, I have a 10,000 square foot training facility. I bought my property, stuff like that, in Coldwater, Michigan, for my love of amateur wrestling. I already started to develop this big monstrosity of a building. It was just a big pole barn. That's all it was. And it had several different rooms to it. And I just basically started to turn one room into throwing out a wrestling mat onto it. And then I put it into a ring. It just, you know, with each passing year, I just added more elements to it that when you look to it now, it's kind of like going, wow, wow, wow. I mean, it just like the never ending type of a building. And again, cool. Way ahead of its time. Because I have a commercial kitchen in there. I have two dormitories in there that's capable of holding 9 bunk beds in one end, 9 bunk beds in the other end. So again, but my whole aspect was I had been to different amateur wrestling camps, and these were the things I go, well, I need to design it kind of like this because these are my memories from being at amateur wrestling camps and stuff like that. You know, it's kind of a Spartan military type fashion. And literally I ran it much like a military type camp. I kept the rules all up on the wall that, the different guys, because I would throw a weekend training camp here or there. And when these weekend warriors, they had their other rules, how they had to keep their beds made, stuff like that. Because if people were coming in to take a view of the place, I don't want to see jock straps hanging up and laying all over the place. I want, you know, they had to make their beds. Probably the first time ever that a man is telling them to make their beds. It was like military. And it was, I go, if you don't have, you got to have yourself squared away. And if you don't, it's not going to work. I mean, normally I would hold up. I literally live out of a planner. I've lived out of a planner since my junior year in high school. How many high school juniors, you know, that have a planner because they're planning their summer wrestling tournament schedule? But then that was, you know, I have 7 other brothers and sisters. I'm second on the totem pole. So there was ask a mom or dad for money to go to college never entered my mind. I simply knew that how am I going to do this on my own? And then what I looked at is like, well, I love football, but there wasn't going to be, I just didn't see how that was going to really pan out there for me. It's like going, okay, wrestling, there's something there, so there's wrestling. And by my sophomore year, the first of the college coaches were, they thought that my older brother, Dave, and I, they thought they were twins for some reason. I was actually a little bit bigger than what he was. But we were starting to really shine in the sport of amateur wrestling. And a couple coaches said, you keep up the good work and there might be some scholarship money. So my first thought was, I'm just going to, upon high school graduation, I'm going to go into the military, give up 4 years of my life, and then come out and go to college on a GI Bill, because I had other team members that they had older siblings, and that's what they did. So that was like, that was option number one. But by my sophomore year, I've got option number two, is like going, how do we make this work? And it means matches. I have to do better. I have to win more type of things. And that's when I started doing not just folk style wrestling during the season. The United States is the only country that does folk style wrestling. The rest of the world does freestyle Greco. Then freshman year, I was doing freestyle. By my sophomore year, I was doing Greco-Roman wrestling. Those are your two international styles that are done, that are competed in the World Championships Olympic Games. Most people don't know. They see wrestling, they think it's all the same. It's not. There's just big difference. As I said before, United States is the only country that does folk style, and people wonder, why don't we get more medals on the Olympic Games? Because you wrestle up until collegially, you'll be about 21 to 22 years of age by the time you graduate. And your folk style days are now over. And now you realize the only chances you got are freestyle Greco. So you're going into freestyle Greco at 22, whereas Russia, Mongolia, China, all these other countries, they are doing it from age 4 on freestyle Greco, and they dominate. So can you believe that's, I don't crazy. Have any coffee in me right yet? Any caffeine?
Oh, that's crazy.
Nothing yet, huh?
No, nothing.
That's awesome, that's
how wired I am naturally.
We can tell he's wired, Greg.
He can power a small city all by himself,
no doubt.
Almost
Now, Dan, real quick, you know, a question I was going to ask you is life after wrestling, but it seems like more wrestling, you know, having camps
I'm still looking at professional wrestling as an option. I'm still looking at even amateur wrestling. I always tell people that they have different categories for master's division. I go, but will I find anybody else that's in that 65 to 70 age category?
No.
You know?
So the senior games have regular wrestling?
There are some things, again, that I'm just starting to explore. Because, again, I'm just looking at things that's like, well, how can I etch my name in some other types of categories here? And I was like going, it's like, well, I'm doing law enforcement corrections, air marshal, border patrol, military. I'm doing all these types of teaching here right now, because there will always be conflict somewhere in our country or around the world. And I go in and I literally work with our military net. And when it comes like to law enforcement corrections, I have a specialty ground combatives program. And almost every physical altercation will end up on the ground. And our law enforcement is not being trained very well. Most law enforcement agencies do not even have any type of a training facility associated with them. They will qualify with their weapon every year.
Without being able to combat with
their weapon. A handgun is one aspect. A taser is another aspect. I mean, these are all different types of things that they have to qualify with. But then when it comes to the physical mechanics, that is very, very few and far in between. So it's like, even when I host law enforcement classes, I don't even sign the certificates anymore. I have another gentleman that, He'll set them all up. He worked with law enforcement, corrections, both. And he goes, Dan, why won't you sign their certificates? I said, I have to believe in them. I go, out of the 20 or 30 people that will be in a class, there might be 4 or 5 that I would want on my team. Everyone else is a casualty waiting to happen.
Oh my gosh.
When you see a guy that when you see a guy that shows up and he's 400 pounds, what's he going to do physically? There's not going to be no foot pursuit. I'm not trying to beat people up here right now, but okay, what I tell in the United States, there used to be a bar. And it seems like that bar, instead of being raised, is being lowered. And I won't do it. Like this coming weekend, I have to. The host, he wanted me to do. He goes, Dan, would you be willing to do a private instruction? I go, well, what do you mean? He says a lot of guys, they know you're a unique kind of commodity, and they like the seminars that you teach. He says, would you be willing to do a side project to where each year that you come on in here, you take them for just a couple hour block, and this is whatever. And see, what I put the most basic foundation is you have to be in shape. So I actually have almost like, I put together almost a 45 minute PT type of thing.
Wow. Okay.
Knowing that I will probably have 50% or more washout rate.
Mm. Okay.
Because I look at people, well, I look at this almost like military. When you look at the more elite, you got standard Army, you got standard Navy, but then you have the Navy SEAL. Then you have the Green Beret. I mean, you got different categories that you could go up on in between. Totally. Like, I want to raise the bar. I don't want to be the standard.
You're definitely you're raising the bar. Now, Greg has a question for you. This is what he asks all celebrities. Go ahead, Greg, with this question.
Yeah. All right, Dan, man, it's been a pleasure. And you got me exhausted. You're so energetic. It's awesome. I want to get my Dan fix every morning to pump up my day.
I do have a lot of men that do follow me because it's like, I have no problem identifying as a male. I know what gender I am. I know when I wake up, I'm not confused. You know, I'm not delusionary. I know exactly what I am.
Not a kangaroo. You're not a squirrel.
If people need me to tell them what they are.
I'm
right there. Awesome. Okay. So Greg, ask me the question.
All right, Dan, here we go. Tell me, Dan, what do you feel is the most important thing in life you've ever learned?
The most important thing? Well, I don't know if I can answer that one. I'm going to have to ponder that question here just a little bit. What's the most important thing? Well, again, the first thing that comes to my mind that I learned is simply to try. I'll put it like that, to try, because too many people simply throw in the towel. Mm. They don't put forth the effort. So simply to try and to attempt something, but then I'm a bonehead that even if I fail, I will probably try and try and try again. But again, I'm not going to repeat the cycle, because if you do the same thing over and over again, that's the definition of being insane. So again, you have to try different aspects. Again, you have to use the thing in between the ears called the brain and try different aspects. Wow. It's kind of like, you know, the people have asked me one question. I thought the question was going to be, say, is what do you want to be remembered for? See, and that's where, and I go, what I want written down on my tombstone is, he made a difference. And I do. Whether that's, you know, you may not like me when it's all done or, but I was bluntly honest there with you.
That's great.
I'm okay. When's the last, here, I'm going for one last little tangent, little rant here real quick. When's the last time you heard about the Presidential Physical Fitness Awards?
Been a while.
Schwarzenegger.
Yes, Arnold Schwarzenegger was the head of that. This was back in the 70s when this was big. This was in the junior high that you had to do a little shuttle run. You had to do this, a couple, you know, so many push-ups, so many jumpy jacks. You know, all within, you know, certain time frames. When's the last time you heard about the Presidential Physical Fitness Awards?
Long time.
Decades. Yeah. Couple decades, easily. And what is the state of our children in right now? What would you say when you see our kids of today in the United States, what is their health? If you're going to give an A, B, C, D, or E?
I give a C.
Yeah. C minus minus, probably more like a D, D plus at best.
Okay. All right.
Again, I have a teaching degree from Arizona State. I'm in my two different counties, because I live in Michigan part-time and I live in Arizona part-time. I'm the number one sub that they were calling in, knowing that I won't come in there and whatever class again. They kept giving me these gym classes. The very first time I went into that gym class, I got my clipboard, my whistle, and I'm coming in there and there's like two different classes in there. I don't know whose class is whose, but I just pull out the whistle, hit out three quick blasts off that real quick. I go, I'm Mr. Severin here today. I'm substitute teacher for whoever it was, Mr. Smith. I go, whoever's part of Mr. Smith's coaching class right now, get your butt over here right now. I'm taking roll here right now. And yeah. I see people moving there slowly. I'm like, chop, chop, my little pork chops, get over here.
All right. Well, Dan, we are running out of time. We get 52 parts to it. I at least can reach out to you anytime. You'll stop off the road and come on the show. Best place to find info on you, Dan. Where can we go?
Go to either dansevern.com or simply just have my email address, dan@dansevern.com. I can't make it more easier than for you. DanSeVern, dansevern.com. Be the best place to find me at.
Appreciate it, Dan. Thanks again. Dan. All right, Kevin. That was a special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and celebrity interviews live from the Grotto. Greg Hanna, guys, take care.